जय माँ. द मदर वंस रिमार्क्ड, इट्स बीन ए वेरी ब्यूटिफुल रिमार्क एंड ऑफन आई हैव ऑलमोस्ट मेडिटेटेड अपॉन इट. शी सेड श्योरबिंदो इज ए परफेक्ट जेंटलमैन. सो आई यूज्ड टू सी इन सो मेनी प्लेसेस हिज जेंटलमैनलीनेस, विच ऑफ कोर्स वी ऑल नो सो मेनी एग्जाम्पल्स स्टोरीज. But even in the life divine, we see that he is a perfect gentleman. There is something to learn so much. When we discuss or argue, we hear about the arguments in the court of King Janak. Discussions. How should discussions be held even there? So, in those courts, sometimes we see that people make comment like with Ashtavakra. Look at him, he is not... He is, from all sides, he is bent over. And there are time to time we hear those things even in the Sabha of King Janak when there are debates. Now here, Shurabindo is actually demolishing the entire thesis of Shankaracharya on which so much of our present belief and understanding of Hindu thought and Sanatan Dharma is built. But he does it with such a gentlemanliness. I mean, it's something amazing. So what does he do before he comes to the final point? That's what we are going to read today. That ultimately, where is he taking us? But before doing that, he pays a homage to Shankaracharya. And when I was reading it, I was reminded, see, that's why one-sided sometimes on WhatsApp, this is what he has said. Yes, he has said that, but he has demolished the whole thesis. And on what grounds? Not simply that, well, it may not be true. Swami Vivekananda had his own way. You know, when he was asked, sir, you say so, but Shankaracharya says, whatever the person asked said, that this is what Shankaracharya says. And Swami Vivekananda says, yes, but I, Vivekananda, says so. Now, that's a different thing altogether, where he has his own experiences. The idea was that my experience is my experience. And ultimately, experience is the ultimate validity. But before we go into that, let's see how beautifully this is an example, one of the examples of perfect gentleman which Sri Aurobindo is. We are on page 471. In a second possible answer on the illusionist basis to the problem of the philosophy of Shankara, which may be described as a qualified illusionism. That's what he did subsequently, that things are true within this realm, they are working, there is something called as a working truth. So if you problem, you go to a doctor, it's like a working truth. But it may not be the ultimate reality. You can't say that don't go to a doctor because it's on an illusion. So that way he, and very beautifully he argues it. If you read through it, it's a very interesting argument. So he says, an answer which is presented with a force and comprehensiveness that are extraordinarily impressive. He is describing his argument before he comes to his verdict. It's something to be learned. How we usually, if somebody at a most mundane level, someone said something or did something and we start throwing everything on the personality itself. But here is Sri Aurobindo, how beautifully first he is describing the person and the personality. And then he will come to where the arguments are wrong and there is something greater. So we are talking of qualified illusionism, which makes a differentiation between vyavaharik, which is the practical truth, and the ultimate truth. A practical reality and the ultimate reality. For this philosophy, that is Shankaracharya's philosophy, affirms a qualified reality for Maya. So that's how he, you know, very interestingly, don't say it's illusion means non-existence. When you are in it, it is real to you. Like if you have entered into, let us say, they have those pay a ticket, I don't know, and watch a horror thing. Like in London, you have, what is it called? Madame Tussauds Museum. No, the wax statues are not horror, but they actually have a horror thing. And you are in a train. So when you are in a train, you go through. Now, once you have sat, train is like a bag carriage. So you can't suddenly jump out of the train. No, I am going back. You are in it. So that time suddenly all kind of horror shows will come. Your being reacts in certain ways. And you can take it that I have to master it or whatever. But it's not real. None of it is real. So there is, like today we use the word virtual reality would be something like this. So in a television, when you see a show, it still impacts you. Even though you know that none of this is real. So there is a kind of experientially valid, practical truth. And that's the qualified illusionism. A qualified reality for Maya, it characterizes it indeed as an ineffable and unaccountable mystery. But at the same time, it does present us with a rational solution. At first sight, thoroughly satisfactory. Look at how he's describing. Of the opposition which afflicts our mind, it accounts for our sense of the persistent and pressing reality of the universe and our sense of the inconclusiveness, insufficiency, vanity, evanescence, a certain unreality of life and phenomenon. So a classic example we all know, Sri Ramakrishna gave this example when a disciple learned, oh, this is all illusion, there is only one reality. So he goes there, very nice, he is gone out remembering, all is God, all is God, all is one reality. So from the front, there is coming an elephant. And on the elephant is sitting a Mahavat. And he is saying, all is one, all is one, all is one. So Mahavat sees he has come very dangerously close and tells him, go out of the way. He says, no, you are a fool. You don't know, all is one reality. Mahavat says, sir, I don't know all this, but you will get hurt. It doesn't. All is one. Elephant is one. I am same. Elephant is same. Everything is same. And of course, elephant throws him aside. So he is hurt very badly. He goes to see Ramakrishna. Says that you said all is one. But what is this that has happened to me? I am bruised all over. And Sri Ramakrishna, with his inimitable sense of humor, wonderful sense of humor, he says, fool, didn't you realize then that the Mahavat is also Brahman? He was telling you to move aside. Why didn't you listen to him? So, this is the story. Shobindo also quotes as Mahavat Brahman. That within this realm, there is a relative reality of the play. You can't say that all is one. Many people have this problem that there is only one God. God is in everyone. Therefore, I must, so often I ask, you want to take a snake in your hand and put it round your neck? Be Shiva, then you can do it. If you try otherwise, you will be with the doctor. In the hospital or with Yamraj, one of them. Often they are very close kins. Anyways, so some talk. Doctors are wonderful people, but sometimes, unknowingly. Okay, so this is the qualified realism. For we find a distinction made between two orders of reality, transcendental and pragmatic. So when you go there, it vanishes. Swami Vivekananda's experience is similar. When suddenly Sri Ramakrishna touched his heart and he felt universe is shaking and disappeared. He had a similar experience in meditation. So the impression is so strong, and we have read that. Why that impression is so strong? Because when the mind suddenly jumps into it, it seems like completely unreal because you don't know the stages. That's why Shobindo speaks of the ascent of consciousness with the Vedic Rishi went through. Otherwise, it's too contrasting. There is no link between the two. For we find a distinction made between two orders of reality, transcendental and pragmatic. So one is the Advaita, transcendental, and the pragmatic is the Vyavaharik. It's valid for this point of time in the realm. Absolute and phenomenal, external and temporal. The former, the reality of the pure being of Brahman. Absolute and supracosmic and eternal. The latter, the reality of Brahman in Maya. Now you see, there is still Brahman. Now it is raising more problems, but Sri Aurobindo will come to that. First he has appreciated, give credit, it on the face.
Oh, Brahman is covered with Maya. Who is then deluded? Now this he will come to. Brahman, absolute, supracosmic and eternal. The latter, the reality of Brahman in Maya, cosmic, temporal and relative. So this is the two orders of the same truth. Like when we are otherwise here and when we are watching a movie. It is the same eye. And we get caught into the movie, start thinking it is real. It's real at that point of time. It could be a movie, a virtual reality, whatever it is. Now he took the whole experiential world at many levels in the same way. That it's a Maya created and Brahman has entered into it. Why? We don't know. There is no answer for it. It remains inexplicable. How come it is impressed by Maya? No answer for it. But basically it gives a cogent explanation if one wants to look at it like that. Few lines below, Shobindo raises this question, last two lines on this page 471. But the question of the nature and extent of this reality at once arises. For the universe and ourselves may be a true reality, though of a lesser order, or they may be partly real, partly unreal. Now you see, this is Brahman experiencing it. Maybe it is also reality, but of a lesser order. It changes the whole perspective. Now, if I am experiencing this, maybe I can switch off the TV and come back into my reality. But Sri Aurobindo will take us much further. But to begin with, if they are partly real, partly unreal, the fault must lie in something wrong, either in the cosmic self-awareness or in our own seeing of ourselves. And the universe which produces an error of being, an error of knowledge, an error in the dynamic of existence. So at least he takes us here that there is an error of perception. Basically it is Brahman, and that's where some people take the rope snake analogy. Now he takes us to something very interesting. So how do we arrive at this conclusion? If you look at, you know, Shankaracharya's famous debate when we read it with Mandan Mishra, actually it does get personal at some point, and it's a very fascinating debate actually, where at the end it seems he has lost, and he has lost, and then his wife Ubhay Bharti tells him, no, there is one question you have not yet replied. And she asks a question relating to the world about a husband-wife relationship. Even he is never married. He doesn't know what. It is a very beautiful debate. And he says, give me a month's time. And he goes into trance, comes out of the body, enters a king who is dying. And then he experiences what that reality is. And then comes back. And then he answers. And Shobindo has quoted this very beautifully in one of his writings. That still. And then he describes on the corpse, you sit and meditate. So I'll come to that point. No, he's not advising us to sit and meditate on the corpse. But this one of the meditations. So the problem here is, it's the reason. How this argument and debate takes place on the ground of reason. So what is the problem with reason? Reason, when it sees two things which are very different, contrasting, it can compare or it can contrast. So when it compared that, okay, this is red, carrot is red, there is something similar in carrot which is red in color. Sun is orange in color, there is something similar, but at the same time sun is sun and orange is orange. But how does it bring in black color and the sun? So it will say they are two totally opposite, they have no correspondence to each other, unless you have the knowledge that all black is light absorbed. That Sri Aurobindo brings in the field of metaphysics, that they are two different order of things. They cannot be connected at all. So that's where he says the mind. Now on page 472, we are on the second passage. It is no doubt so felt by mind withdrawing from itself and its structures. But this is only because the mind is an instrument of ignorance, and when it withdraws from its construction, from its ignorant and imperfect picture of the universe, it is impelled to regard them as nothing more than its own fictions and formations, unfounded, unreal, the gulf between its ignorance and the supreme truth and knowledge disables it from discovering the true connection of the transcendent reality and the cosmic reality. That's why Aurobindo speaks of planes of consciousness. That's why the psychic being, for the complete experience of the reality. Otherwise, it's too shocking. As I said about Swami Vivekananda, even Aurobindo had an experience like that. Suddenly, everything receded. He has recounted it in his poem, Nirvana, that all becomes still. The city floats like a picture as if it's gone far away, without any relief. Now, when you have this experience and that, there is such a contrast. There is no connecting link. No, even in human life it happens. Somebody will say, see, he is like this, so and so. And then somebody will say, no, you don't know, he is like this. Now, what is the link? We don't know the link. So we say, no, either you are saying a lie or this is a lie. One of the two is true. But no, there is a link. It is very difficult for the human mind to conceive that both can be true and there can be a connection between. At every level it applies. But here, it's a big contrast. Because when you see these two, there is a total, on one side there are names and forms, on the other side they dissolve in the transcendent. Now, unless one knows the cosmic consciousness, this is what Sri Aurobindo has said in the earlier third or fourth chapter of The Life Divine. Unless you understand the cosmic consciousness and its link with the transcendent, this mystery cannot be solved. And Mother described it like this, that there is a ladder. We are climbing on the rung, so at between the two rungs and all around is Sachidanand. So if you don't climb the ladder, from wherever you are standing, you enter into the experience of Sachidanand. There is no link. To understand how Sachidanand became this, you have to climb the ladder. That's why the ascension, the whole Ashupati is yatra of ascension through the planes. Why he has to do it if it is only a question of divine realization? So many people have realized the divine. Why Sri Aurobindo takes this route? Precisely to get to the mystery. How Sachidanand became this? And therefore the ascent of consciousness and reaching that point where consciousness, the supreme, begins to enter into cosmic consciousness, and that's why he has used the word the missing link, and that missing link is the supermind. So one cannot solve this mystery without that, because the experientially they are so different, rationally they are so different. That is immortal, this is perishable stuff to start with. That is eternal, this is time bound. So reason cannot do it. And then he comes, the last two lines, in a higher status of consciousness, the difficulty disappears. Basically, it's a very smart way of saying, from the mind, he entered into that state and realized what he did. Had he climbed to a higher status of consciousness, he would have understood and the difficulty would have disappeared. That's exactly what happened to the rishis. They were going layer to layer to layer. And then they reached very close. That's why Yagvalk have almost reached that point of solving the mystery. It is our own version of the Gordian knot. Yagvalk almost solves the mystery when he says, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapihita Mukham Tattvam Pushanna Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Drishte. He stands at the doors of the sun, almost in that penumbra he is bathing. And then he says, remove that lid. O fosterer, O coverer, remove that lid. So that I may see the auspicious, the true, the law of truth I may know. I am living under the law of Yama. It's a law of ignorance. Valid within us. But invalid. What is the law of truth? That's our mythology. No? Yama is the child of sun, outcast. Stories very crudely. They could have written a nice story. But anyways, it's a story that Yama is the guardian of the mortal worlds. But he is the child of Surya. Similarly, in the Rig Veda, the story is of the eighth son of Aditi cast into the darkness. Very beautiful symbolic stories. So here he says, in the higher consciousness, the difficulty disappears. The connection is established. The sense of unreality recedes and a theory of illusion becomes superfluous and inapplicable. How beautiful. Sometimes people say, many of us here have this experience. In everything, Hare, mother's grace. Hare, mother, which is true to yourself. Somebody else would say, what is it? Everywhere you are seeing the mother, but it is true. Now you see, there is a link. Once you get the link, then you begin to see. Why you begin to see? Because you realize that there was, even logically, this could, unless you say coincidence. Coincidence is a name we give to all kinds of things. Then you see how the divine is working in so many ways. The links begin to appear to our eyes as a result of the grace. So this is one where he gives a final stop. That, well, at a rational mind level, it sounds very good. There is a pragmatic reality and there is a transcendent reality. When you are in this class, behave like this is true. But strive to come out of it. When you come out of this, you will realize that even your idea of myself being there was false. QED. But Sri Aurobindo says that this is how it appears to the reason. There is a higher status. That he will come to subsequently. Now page 473. Another aspect which very often say, this is all temporary, transient. Very beautiful argument he will give. It is temporary and transient, but of what? So therefore it has no validity, no reality. Kehte hai jnani, dunya hai pani, pani pe likhi dikhai, hai kisne dekhi, hai kisne jani, haath kisi ke na aai. Na kuch tera na mera, musafir jayega kahan. Like nothing belongs to you. And the same person after singing this song and all this, if he says, Swamiji, he'll say, chadhawa de dena. Because ashram chalana hai. Kya chalana hai? If really you believe in it, go to the Himalayas. It doesn't make sense. Agar haath kisi ke na aayi, to phir kyon haath laga rahe ho? But this is a way of saying. So is there a connection between the temporal and transient and the eternal? Now this is the next connection he is giving. But the universe is condemned as ultimately unreal because it is temporary and not eternal, a perishable form of being imposed on the formless and imperishable. Again, the mind's problem. All things begin with the formless and take form. Any person who is even a little bit creative writer knows it. Actually, it's very interesting, that whole process described in psychology. How do you create anything? This is called a estrus. This is the same process in creation. You don't know. You feel the urge. Many children nowadays feel a restless urge. They don't know what for. They have to be given direction. If you don't give them a direction, then that restlessness carries them in. So, you feel not a restless urge to create, but there is a kind of something is happening, like inside a chick. That's how mother describes. Something is happening. You don't know what. You need to express. You don't know how. People try all kinds of things. Then a time comes when something begins to form, like an idea. And then that idea, all good authors meditate upon the idea. This is the way Sri Aurobindo himself gives. We want to have all the details. This is very damaging to tell a child that write an essay on cow and you start giving cow, char paav hai, ye hai. No, let him meditate on the cow. Maybe he will say that go is really our mata. And it's practically true. I mean, the only milk you can give other than mother's milk is cow's milk. Most outward level. I am not even talking of the inner levels. And therefore we must. So now when a child is supplied with everything. Chat GPT, be careful. I mean, when you are supplied with everything. AI. What you are doing? You are actually leading towards the mental faculties degenerating, all this. It's a new version. So he is saying that we also do that there is no link. We have not tried to find the link. And we'll take some examples of that. The relation can be illustrated by the analogy of earth and the pot. We heard that analogy. And several analogy we can take which are in real life. Love. When people fall in love. When they fall in love at whatever, 10, 15, it doesn't work out. So what is transient? Is love transient? If love is transient, then he will never again feel love. Love is not transient. See the beauty of it. The forms through which it is manifesting is transient. There is always an eternal value behind transient thing. That's the meaning of the Upanishad when it says, Nityo Nityanam. It can be seen beautifully in another way. Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidatati Kaman. So that which is conscious in the unconscious, that's why the plants automatically makes the right moves. That's why the planets are in their orbit. It's amazing. There is a consciousness which is operating. If you just read the life of the honeybee, it's so fascinating. Ant, it looks, my God, she has not read a book on ants. The professor has done research on ants, but it is behaving so accurately. Chetanas Chetananam. So when we look at that way, then we, and he will take us step by step, so let me not break that. This whole thing is given about transient, ephemeral and the formless. In the Bhagavad, is described in the form of a story. And the story goes, I think it's Markandeya Rishi. So he is one of the immortals. So he witnesses the end of creation, Pralaya. Now creation has ended. Slowly everything has become Jalamagna. What happens next? He is there. He is a witness. He cannot die. And then he sees there is a baby floating on the water on a lotus leaf. Krishna. And then he is wondering, how come you are here? It is a story, very beautiful story. How come you are here? Everything is destroyed. And then the baby smiles, and next he discovers he is transported inside the baby. Now what he experiences there is very strange. He experiences everything that was he was experiencing before the pralaya. Life is going on. Inside him everything is still there. Nothing is destroyed. Everything is there. And then he's wondering which is real. Then he comes out again. He sees the baby smiling. But he discovers, you know, the unmanifest and the manifest. All that is manifesting in temporary, transient form and name has an eternal truth. But it will take a proper time. Through time it is manifesting. So it's not like magic. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, have faith, wait. It's not like magic, because there is a reason, there is a process behind every miracle. It will happen, but right now we don't understand and don't know. So therefore, we only can aspire and then we can declare, oh, it doesn't work out. But it's all safe in the heart of the one. So there is nothing like an absolute pralaya. It always remains in the heart of the one. And that's where this example of also goes. Now, after that, he comes to, on page 474, one by one, all the various theories. He is coming to the real issue. Let's wait for the suspense. I feel like speaking about it. Similarly, the reasoning which cancels the dynamics of the absolute. Now he is touching the core of the problem. What are the dynamics of the absolute? Maya. He has already declared whose Maya it is. That's why he writes, you can go par moha, you cannot go across Maya, because she is the Maya of the Lord. Sri Krishna says that in the Gita. See, it's Sri Krishna speaking, but in great detail. It's Sri Krishna. You can see these are the questions. He says, my Maya, and then he speaks about his Maya and Yoga Maya and the Vistar. What is this Maya? It is his Maya. You cannot slay it. You can slay moha. You can understand the play from avidya. When you transit to vidyamai maya, you understand. When you, from this maya of ignorance, you enter into the maya of the divine knowledge, you understand the play. And with everything, you are how it should be. That's what the Ishapanishad says. So he says, the imposition of the stigma of unreal reality on the pragmatic truth of things, because it is pragmatic, is difficult to accept. For the pragmatic truth is, after all, not something, quite other. Pragmatic truth is, as I said, expression of love. Some olden times, people used to scold when on children, scold to children. Sometimes they would give a talak talak. Now it's the other swing, because child can take you to court. Huh? So now parents are very cautious. Now they go and scold the teachers. Two extremes. Now what is common to both? Love. Can we say just because the mama scolded, therefore love is not real? It's the expression. So he's coming to that, that manifestation is graded. But he will take step by step, take us. So he says, just because it is pragmatic, you are jumping from here to there, therefore you say there is no link. But there is a link, which you have to understand. See, people who jump from one extreme to another, this is what happens with their life, because they don't know, they miss the missing link. Like in Switzerland or some place like that, if a child complains to the police that my parents have sort of, you know, talked to me in loud voice, parents can be arrested. No, I'm not joking. Real story, people wrote. And if you raise a chadi and say, "Ek lagaunga thapdi," you can be arrested. The child will be put in custody away from the parents. I know a case, and it was so frustrating. Indian parents, of course, poor fellows didn't know, you know, still Indian at heart. And it was so difficult. Child is unhappy and parents are unhappy. But the law is happy that we are saving a child from the grip of parents. So, for the pragmatic truth is after all not something quite other, quite separate and unconnected with spiritual truth. It is still Brahman, let us not forget it. It is a result of the energy or a motion of the dynamic activity of the spirit. Now we are coming to the secret. A distinction must no doubt be made between the two, but the idea of an entire opposition can rest only on the postulate that a silent and quiescent status is the eternal's true and whole being. But in that case, we must conclude that there is nothing dynamic in the absolute, and all dynamism is a contradiction of the supreme nature of the divine and eternal. Now we see where the whole problem comes. The separation of Brahman and Maya. It is his Shakti. But this is not how it was seen. They are too different. Why? Because the results are very different. If you enter into the Brahman consciousness, it's wonderful peace, silence. See, this is how even in house, father and mother, father's method is very different. Arre de do, koi baat nahi hai. Kyo de do? Kya karega tu paisa ka? All this, you know, she will ask. But are they different? Both have the same love. But the expression is different. So this is where he says they are one. That's where he is leading us. The whole problem comes from there, that Maya is other than Brahman. See where the problem comes. So we cannot explain the world. Maya has somehow created, Brahman has entered into it. Maybe why? That's a different story altogether. Is deluded by whom? Maya. That's how the whole idea of feminine being subordinate came. Mother corrected it in the ashram that march past, when all around the march past, and you see that picture of, you know, the boy and the girl marching together, and people would initially, when they practice, some people threw stones. They couldn't accept this. How can the two be equal? See, it comes from there. Maya is subordinate. So then, this was told to the mother. Mother said, ignore it. Continue. This is the future. This is the future. But because of this idea that Maya is subordinate and Brahman is supreme, there has come a tendency that the feminine is a chalana. And the masculine is ultimately true. It has actually, there is a mother's writing on this where she explains this very well. And see how the world is changing beautifully in harmony with the original truth. Not that woman is masculine, feminine, but the essence. Because in nature, that's how nature tries to create. So he is taking us step by step. A distinction must be no doubt made, but if a temporal or cosmic reality of any kind exists, there must be a power, an inherent dynamic force of the absolute which brought it into being, and there is no reason to suppose that the power of the absolute can do nothing but create illusions. Case closed. See how he starts. Aye Shankaracharya ji, baithi aap, bahut achhe, mahan hai, kitna achha aapne likha, wonderful. Uske baad wo ab samjha rahe hain. So true, so rational, absolutely. that divine has somehow created it. All that he has created is illusions. It's a paradox. And what kind of illusion? Achha, if it's a very nice illusion, okay, fine. We don't mind it. Where at every step there is pitfall, there is injury, there is disease, all that he comes, that is for later. He will explain that. So, all of it. But first this aspect, that it is the creation of the power of the absolute. And then we come to the next page. There are several symbols of this kind. Page 475, third line. But as a concept, this position of the thought has no inevitability. There is no reason why we should not conceive of the reality as at once static and dynamic. See, this is the beautiful addition of Sri Aurobindo. There are two who are one and play in many worlds, in knowledge and ignorance, they have spoken and met. Their light and darkness are our eyes interchange. But they are one. The two who are one are the right and might in things. So this idea of Ishwara and Shakti being one, now it is there in Indian thought. But strictly when you enter into Mayavad, it becomes very difficult. So where all the idea is there, there is the idea of Shiva and Shakti. Mother herself spoke of the Shivlingam, where you have the Yoni and the Shivlingam as the symbol of transformation. That's why what she meant. But it is still something which is taking place on the subtle plane. But if you read the story, Shiva is transcendent. How close he comes? He comes to Mount Kailash, a material. Where does Mata Parvati come? She is born to the mountains. You don't see this in any other story. She is now born into the mountains. And she is, therefore, mountain is the highest point of earth. So the highest point of earth and the creator descending below with his creatoric consciousness, and the two must meet together. So she has to do tapasya. That's why Parvati's tapasya is immortalized in Kumar Sambhavam, Kalidas epic, and beautiful. How she does tapasya? Why she has to do tapasya? She is doing tapasya for the earth. Some of us who ask why mother had to do tapasya, please read Indian literature. You will find abundant examples of this. She identifies with the earth nature and does tapasya. Who is she? She is the consort of Shiva. Who comes to help her in the tapasya and test her? Shiva. At the end of the day, last part of the story is he comes as a beggar and says, not a beggar, he comes as a very rich. Aray, why you want that Shiva? He is useless. He is a beggar. He doesn't even have a Mercedes. Yeah, you know what? He travels on a bull. Why you want him? You really love him. He is not worth doing anything. He can't earn a penny. And that time we see in that last phase of tapasya, Mata Parvati says, dare say one more word. And with my tapo shakti, you are going to vanish, bhasmo jaoge. And then he appears. Such a beautiful image. He has nothing and yet he is capable of giving anything. That is the Indian thought. What a, you know, can you call him king? Can you call him beggar? And Shri Krishna, of course, who comes down on earth. So this is the whole idea of the two being one. This Maya and Brahman doesn't solve the mystery. You have to go beyond Brahman. And first time, because in the Upanishad and Vedas, we speak of the two Purushas, the Shara and the Akshara. They don't use the word. But there is this ever transient, the two birds. Ever transient world and the bird who is sitting and enjoying eating nothing. And we all know the famous joke where in Patiala somebody was, I was reading actually this two birds. And there was a man listening very raptly. He said, sir, वो जो दूसरी चिड़िया है खाने का उसका भी तो मन करता होगा. She is enjoying, she is not eating. But the other bird is enjoying. When she eats, no, she is eating. So when she eats, she gets the sweet bitter fruits. This is a Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Dvasu Padna, image. But what is it that the Gita brings? Gita brings something else for the first time in bold relief. Shara, mutable, ever-changing world. Akshara Brahman. We know the immutable and beyond it the Purushottama. Without that the picture is complete. So Brahman and Maya is interval. And Shubindo takes up that and brings us back to that. original truth of Ishvara and Shakti. And there are many other logics associated with it, but we'll stay right now on the page. We'll talk about it sometime else. There is no reason why we should not conceive of the reality as at once static and dynamic. It is perfectly rational to suppose that the eternal status of being of the reality contains in it an eternal force of being, and the dynamism must necessarily carry in itself a power of action and movement, a kinesis. Both status of being and movement of being can be real. If you read it, you understand why Shurabindu and the mother, this relation. If you ask me, you will get something. If you ask the mother, you will get everything. Turn to mother, this enough. She is the mediatrix power of the Supreme. She is the Shakti. You want to bypass Shakti? It is like Sringi Rishi doesn't like, because he sees Shiva has got married. He has gone into tapasya before he got married. When he comes back, he sees Shiva has got married. There is a whole household. Kheer is being made and everything wonderfully. So he says he has lost his way. But he has still some regard for Shiva. He is sitting. So then Shiva, just to convince him, comes with Mata Parvati. And both sit together and Shiva gives a sermon. At the end of the sermon, everybody has to do pranam and parikrama. So they all do pranam and do parikrama of Shiva and Parvati. Sringi Rishi doesn't want to do that. Shiva is okay, but not Parvati. So he takes the form of a bhavra, goes around Shiva's jata and comes back. So Mata Parvati says, I see that you don't need me, so be it. He collapses into nothing. Then he cries. Everything is Shakti. Thought is Shakti. Feeling is Shakti, or if you want to put it at our level, Prakriti. You cannot move an inch without her. Forget about realizing the divine. So that's where the oneness of Shakti and the Ishvara. Ishvara and Shakti, which he describes. So this is where Sri Aurobindo's, we can call it new, because even in the Gita, Sri Krishna takes us to the mystery, but doesn't fully, he talks about, Sri Krishna speaks about his Maya, gives a little hint about it, but he doesn't fully reveal it. He was waiting that, well, let the war be over, then in Kali Yuga we'll have terrible wars and many more questions that I'll comprehensively answer. So that answer is in the life divine. Okay, so here is the union of Shiva and Shakti. Few lines below, when we discover the stable reality underlying all this movement of energy and this creation of forms, we do indeed perceive that the status of created forms is only temporary. This is the observation. There is a stability of repetition of the kinesis in a same persistent action and figure of movement, which maintains substance of being in stable form of itself. But this stability is created, and the one permanent and self-existent status is that of the eternal being whose energy erected the form. So he is going step by step into all of this. Now comes the other problem. So mother speaks about it in one of her prayers. So we should go in the stable. Still, you know, somebody will argue, okay, agreed, they are one. She has created out of sanction of him. But then why we should get into it? Because the moment you act, see, action is a very interesting thing. When you sit and meditate, you can touch that stable core. When you act, by its nature, you have to concentrate and focus. See where the problem lies. So many people, I mean, if you don't get into that true karma yoga, which is the way to liberate and yet act, but action invariably leads to losing that contact which is deep inside to begin with. Not always, you can, I mean, ultimately they are one. So he takes up this problem, page 476. But in experience we find that for us it is normally a quiescence that brings in the stable realization of the eternal and the infinite. It is in silence or quietude that we feel most firmly the something that is behind the world, shown to us by our mind and senses. Is admitting that this is how it seems. Few lines below. Action leads to ignorance. This is how it has been said. To the created and finite, kinesis and creation are a contradiction of the immutable reality, the pure uncreated existence. But the reasoning is not wholly valid. Now, all this actually Shankaracharya has not raised. He stops there. He is raising for modern neophytes who will argue like this. So he is, many people in ashram, when people, what did Sri Aurobindo say? They wanted to get a mantra on which they can meditate. This is the reason why Sri Aurobindo wrote this letter. Here we do not give mantra, we give work. Mother gives work. This is the reason, because the moment you give mantra for meditation, later on he said, the only mantra is the mother's name or mine. You enter into that mode, we will sit and meditate upon the mantra. But work, because this is the whole secret. And what that action is, ordinarily when we work, it looks like we are losing contact. So he's taking up this problem also. But the reasoning is not wholly valid because it is looking at perception and action only as they are in our mental cognition of the world and its movement. But that is the experience of our surface being regarding things from its shifting motion in time, a regard itself superficial, fragmentary and delimited, not total, not plunging into the inner sense of things. In fact, we find that action need not bind or limit if we get rid of this moment cognition into a status of cognition of the eternal, proper to the true consciousness. Let's take an example. Child goes to the school, is waiting, kab chutti hogi. Suddenly bell rings, teacher ji says, chutti ho gayi, class ho gayi puri, bacha chala gaya. Ho gayi kya puri? Nahi, kal phir hogi. Ye hai universe mein, but people don't understand why. Now that he'll talk later. But it's not over. Now if you ask the parent, bacha bada parishan hai, class, why are you sending him to the class? Every day see, he'll say, no, you don't know. The problem is not the class. I want him to go through all the classes through the school. But why? Are classroom is to class to bahana hai. Doctor hame banana hai. Now the parent has a different idea altogether. He has to go through this process. Class is only a way to develop. So our dealing with the temporary and the transient is so that we are ready for manifesting the eternal. This is the whole thing. Many times mother once spoke about, for example, human love. There is a movie also. Then we'll come to this wonderful writing of the mother. So the movie is Chitralekha or Chandralekha? Somebody would correct me. Chandralekha. Chitralekha. Okay. Anything. But Lekha is correct. Cha is correct. So Chitra Chandralekha. So in that movie, Pradeep Kumar is there as the hero and is based on one of the novels of Bhagwati Charan Varma. So it's about a sannyasi and a king, and ultimately it's about the Shrestha of Karma Yoga. See, because this is what has eaten the Indian mind. Karma is yoga. So this courtesan loves this man, or rather the man loves the courtesan, the king. But she loves the sannyasi. Now she goes, you know, and the whole thing starts just like Swami Vivekananda's life. There is a real instance like that. Sannyasis go sometime, there is a patronage of the king. So he walks into the assembly and this woman, she's a courtesan, she is singing a song. And he says, oh, this is Maya, this is Chal, all this. So he starts moving away in anger. And then she sings the song. Sansar se bhaage firte ho, Bhagwan ko tum kya paoge? Very profound. Now you say, how does it apply? We'll come to that, how mother speaks of it. And there is another very interesting with Swami Vivekananda, when he was not comfortable sitting in the Raja, I think, of Mysore, and this courtesan came and she started. When he came, he was uncomfortably started going. And then she sings the song, प्रभु जी मोरे अवगुण चित्न धरो, समदर्शी है नाम तिहारो। यू आर सपोज टू ट्रीट पारस गुण अवगुण नहीं देखत, एक लोहा पूजा में राखत एक घर बधिक पढ़ो। पारस गुण अवगुण नहीं देखत कंचन करत खरो। इस इज वाई आर यू जजिंग मी, यू सी नाउडेज दिस कम, वाई आर यू ट्रीटिंग मी विद डिसडेन, दैट दिस वर्ल्ड इज अ डिसडेन। इफ यू आर द लॉर्ड ब्रह्मन, क्योर इट ऑफ इट्स मैलडी, दैट इज वर्दी ऑफ द सुप्रीम रियालिटी। सो मदर स्पीक्स ऑफ व्हेन शी वॉज आस्क्ड ह्यूमन लव, शी सेज व्हाट शुड वी डू, वी हैव टू अल्टीमेटली गेट टू द डिवाइन लव, व्हाट शुड वी डू व्हेन ह्यूमन लव कम्स इनटू आवर लाइफ। शी गिव्स ए वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग आंसर, इट्स इन आई थिंक वॉल्यूम 8 पेज 389 अराउंड दैट। शी सेज go through it, and then she doesn't say go through it only because of the experience that it is ephemeral, that is one part. She says if to that you can add up that how to love truly, unselfishly, without expecting anything, then you will touch the core of what love truly is. It becomes completely independent, and then the next step is, she says, then you are ready for perceiving this divine love in whole creation. See how divine loves us. So all those people who have this idea, divine will punish, divine will be angry, they don't know what is divine love. Of course, divine may give a nice, good slap, but out of deepest love. Because he loves. That's how Shivinda puts it. That if you love me, O misfortune, thou art a blessing of my beloved. He says, strike me if thou lovest me. He says, there is one of his aphorisms. If you strike me not, then I would think that thou lovest me not. So the whole perspective changes. So temporary transient is a step-by-step unfolding of the manifestation of the divine. Hence we have to go through this schooling process. We are in a hurry to quit the school and rush towards, whatever, the ineffable. But then if that was the goal, why would there be a world at all? Mother says very beautifully in one of her conversation, if the divine wanted nirvana, why should there would be a world at all? She gives a very powerful answer there. If he wanted nirvana, what impelled him to world? Can anyone impel? He is in absolute freedom. So this idea that Maya impelled doesn't hold good. Few more lines, because today there is only one class, because I don't know, class means satsang, sharing, whatever it is. Because there is only dining room is early, so Maya will call us is prasad. See, this is how we look at it. It's not food which is ensnaring us, it is prasad. Prasad is coming from the divine. So we'll probably eat another 5-10 minutes, then we can stop. So he says that people would say action leads to ignorance, but this is not true. In fact, we find that action need not bind or limit. Action does not bind or limit the liberated man. Action does not bind or limit the eternal. But we can go further and say that action does not bind or limit our own true being at all. See how is, so where is this he is quoting from? Action does not bind the eternal. Kurvan nevi, in Isha Upanishad again. कुर्वन् नेवे हे कर्माणि जिजे विशेषतांग समा एवं त्वयि नान्य पंथा। सो ही सेज ना कर्म लिप्यते नरः, वेरी पावरफुल। कुर्वन् नेवे हे कर्माणि, लेट अस डू एक्शन एंड वेरीली वांट टू लिव फॉर 100 इयर्स। वी विल से व्हाट इज द उपनिषद सेइंग, वी शुड बी रशिंग इन द क्यू। ही सेज नो, व्हेन यू डू इट, दिस इज द पाथ शोन टू अस बाय दोज हु हैव गॉन बिफोर अस। And then he says, action does not cleave. Nalipyate narah. It does not cleave to a man. What does Sri Krishna say toward the end? Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. Exactly same thing. It will not cleave to you. You are worried and afraid. See all the Gita, now it's, we are coming to that climax. So he's saying it does not cleave to the liberated man. A person in it, even the true being, that is the psychic being, forget about divine, even to the psychic being, if you live in the psychic being, it does not cleave. There is a very interesting story with which, you know, it's there are letters which are published, but often the questions are not. Now, of course, some of them, there is a question. So don't ask me the source, but the letter is there. So there was this lady who used to come from US, and she describes an experience where she had a physical thing with the husband, and she had during that time the experience of the self, and she writes to Sri Aurobindo, how is this possible? And Sri Aurobindo gives her a very interesting reason. He says, actually, because that time you were, and he knew what her thoughts are. That's the beauty. She has not written. She says, you thought that it is because you didn't want it, but the husband was there and you took it that it is the divine and you were praying, isn't it? She says, yes. So you realize the self. Even an action does not cleave what extent it can go. There are a number of examples of this kind. So even to the psychic being, it does not afflict. It afflicts the ego and so therefore the suffering. So let's complete this part. But we can go further and say that it does not bind even our true being at all. Action has no such effect on the spiritual person or purusha or on the psychic entity within us. It binds or limits only the surface constructed personality, QED. Law of karma operates very differently with the psychic being. It only helps it to grow. But to the surface being, it will go through whatever it has to go through. If you are too much greedy, after death, that part which is little bit very greedy will come in goats. If you are very suspicious, you will have dogs. But if you, along with suspicion, were turned toward the divine mother, you will be born near ashram. You know, dogs, that part, not you, that little vital little. And so you will be doing the guarding. You see, these dogs are amazing, no? They will recognize that this person is a devotee. They will not bark. But otherwise, they will, whole army will bark. A special dog. That part will come. So that's, of course, right? So they are very powerful. It does not bind or limit. It is only the surface constructed personality. He will talk all this in rebirth at great length. So let's not. This personality is a temporary expression of our self-being, a changing form of it empowered to exist by it, dependent on it for substance and endurance, temporary but not unreal. So what is the difference? External personality is supposed to mediate the urge in the psychic being. So psychic being feels love, let's take the true love, not I'm talking of what goes. And the surface personality says, yeah, but I must also have my cut. That's where the problem comes. Or let us say that you are going to a divine or handling something of the divine. And you suddenly, like the priest say, mera bhi to kuch banta hai share. This is the surface personality. But the psychic being is free because it cannot. It by its nature, it is a creation of the divine. If you go to its core, it knows the truth. It is the eater of the lotus in the honey. It is the Hansa which knows the difference. Deep within us, if we look, any of us, we will know what is true. But on the surface, janami dharmam, but pravarti nahi hai. Janami adharmam, nivrati nahi hai. Ye hai psychic being ka aur bahar ka. So to that extent, yes, it has. That's why things are temporary. Last line. Thought and action help it to develop. Develop what? The psychic entity. So only problem is if our actions are not in tune with it. If you are being selfish. So what happens? This takes long. So you are delaying the journey. Manifestation gets more and more complicated and delayed. So this should not be taken as a sanction. Sri Aurobindo said it doesn't matter. It matters. How it matters? Because psychic being has to develop from the nascent state, like a seed. What you feed in it, that's how it will come out. It has to develop into a whole divine being. Thought and action help it to develop, to change, to alter and expand its limits, but at the same time to maintain limits. In that sense, they are limiting and binding. They are themselves an incomplete mode of self-revelation. That's how it is, one class to another. You have to go through till you reach that point where you don't need the class. You can even be the teacher. So this is the process of evolution, which is inbuilt in creation. It's not about reward punishment. You will talk about it later. But basically, through our imperfect actions, which will invariably be erroneous to begin with, yet the psychic personality, something comes and it grows. Sometimes you see that, even in man like Hitler, known asura, falsehood. But even he badly loved, I think, probably a cat or maybe his girlfriend, whoever it was. His niece. He really loved, means he couldn't bear it. As sometimes you'll see in these movies also, there is one weakness even of the villain. He is cruel, absolutely, but this is chota bhai whom he'll die for it. So that's how it is developing. It's a very small. Then one day he will learn to love the whole creation. But love starts like that in the cruelest monster. The limitation, which is a necessary circumstance of an evolutive self-determination, might be an abrogation of self or derogation from self, from reality, and therefore itself unreal, if it altered the essentiality or totality of the being. It would be a bondage of the path of the spirit and therefore illegitimate if it obscured by an alien imposition proceeding from a force that is not self. So all this saying, if it were to do that, but it is a means to develop. That's why action is important, because it's the means through which we develop the psychic being. If we don't act, we are not giving it the needed experience. And then he gives the master stroke. But the essence of being remains the same in all action and formation. All that is in the kinesis, the movement, the action, the creation is the Brahman. The becoming is a movement of the being. There is a sanction from behind. Even the psychic being gives a mood sanction. It has a very far-reaching understanding. If it really stops giving sanction, after some time it will withdraw. Doesn't matter, whatever is the outer age. It says, okay, done. This fellow is, I'll take a new body. But generally it allows, because it can see something. The action, the creation is the Brahman. The becoming is a movement of the being. Time is a manifestation of the eternal. All is one being, one consciousness, one even in infinite multiplicity. And there is no need to bisect it into an opposition of transcendent reality and unreal cosmic many. So maybe we can stop here and continue next day. There is a place very powerfully somewhere where the mother says, your body, this body, all is one body. Very powerful. Of course, in her, that body has reached that point where it can take off. But there is that interconnectedness. Shobindu says the same thing. People ask, why don't you transform yourself? And he says, no, because you will agree that there is some matter in this body and this matter is connected with everyone. And that's why the mother said, it is the lack of receptivity of the earth and men, because it's interconnected. He can cut it if he has to practice that kind of sadhana, mayavad, he could easily cut it. And mother at one place says, my child, it was very easy for both of us to enter into the divine and the supreme consciousness. That is very easy. World has been doing it. But he has to take deliberately. It's not that he's bound to be here. But he has taken it and it's connected with everyone. So whatever is happening in everybody's life is entering into him. And he has deliberately connected himself. And that's where we understand the great divine sacrifice. Okay, tomorrow, I don't know whether if there is one class, then we'll have one. But there may be two. We'll see the notice. Are you sure? It's not yet put. You know the inner truth. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. So tomorrow also probably we'll have one class. Thank you. Jai Ma.